Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Adventures in Angular. My name is Alyssa Nichol, and today with us on the panel, we have Eddie Hinkle.
Hey, everyone.
And Chris Ford.
Good day.
And our marvelous guest is Ravi Velyat. Say hello, Ravi.
Hey, how are you? And thank you for having me here, by the way.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. So, Ravi, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do in the Angular community.
So, let me start when I, you know, started off my career back in 2008. I started off as a junior PHP developer and then moved on to a senior position, then a tech lead and a team lead. And, you know, meanwhile, I also went along with Angular development as well. Then came in Node.js and then React and then Angular 2.0. And now I'm working with Vue.js. We'll talk about that, by the way. That's an interesting topic. But now I'm working with Vue.js as well. And as far as backend programming is concerned, I do Node.js and Laravel as well. And I've been training people since 2008. You know, whatever I can, I try to teach people. That's how I learn things, you know. So from that day till date, 12 years into training. And the last company that I left, I was a project manager. And I had a team of like 30 people, 30 odd people, ranging from all the types of developers and QAs and designers and all. So then I left the company. I didn't want to spend the rest of life with those 30 people. I wanted to meet more people. So mainly into training after that and doing some consulting as well. And I have trained people at Wipro, Capgemini, Conduent, Aviva, Etisalat, TCS, and like those are a few of them. And then there are a lot of smaller companies whom I train at. So I've been lucky that way.
Hey folks, this is Charles Maxwood, and I just launched my book, Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. It's up on Amazon. We self-published it. I would love your support. If you want to go check it out, you can find it there. The Max Coder's Guide to Finding Your Dream Developer Job. Have a good one. Max out.
So you've like basically done it all. Like you've gone from development to teaching to managing. There's like no, and like from front end to back end. So it's like no side of it you haven't touched.
Yeah, I don't have any complaints. Yeah, I have almost touched all the, like, I'm like the jack of all trades and ace of none. So at least I can make it good in training.
I was just thinking that I feel like we finally found the mythical 10x developer.
Maybe. I don't know.
So, Ravi, what are we talking about today? What is our topic?
So we're talking about component communication in Angular. And the reason that I have chosen this topic is that it is quite interesting and quite varied as far as the communication is concerned, as far as Angular components are. So we would be talking about components and how, you know, components came in, or how components are developed in Angular and how they're communicating with one another through services. And even if no services are there, how can they communicate? So that is basically what it is.
Very cool. Well, let's dive right in. And I actually wanted to ask, you talk about doing training. Is it full stack training that you do or Angular specific?
It is full stack. I started off as a React trainer. And, you know, back in the day, I used to train people in PHP. So from PHP to React to Angular, and then Vue, and now Node.js and Laravel. So pretty much full stack.
Very cool. That's awesome.
So shall we start the topic?
Absolutely. Let's dive in.
Sure. So I would like to start it off with a little bit of a background on Angular for all the listeners. Angular.js was in the late 2010 decade, Angular.js came into the picture, and that particular technology was the one which introduced components to us. However, they were not used as much because the whole aim of Angular.js was to fit into the development that the developers do, you know, back in the day, the developers did. And at that point, developers were not very much at home with components and all, but still Angular.js had components. And then came in React. And React was the one that actually ran with components itself. And it was then that all the developers accepted widely that components are actually the way that front-end development would go.
I didn't realize that React was that old. Like that. So did React happen before Angular 2 hit?
Yes. Yes.
And, oh, wow. That,
And that was the reason Angular 2 happened, you know. If you think about it, I mean, nothing officially that I have read, but if we think about it, Angular.js and React, they have different types of handling the document object model. And if Angular.js would have been the way it would have been, or the way it is right now, then Angular would not have been surviving the whole race, you know. And that's what I think, where Google took a decision that let's risk it. Let's bring it totally something new, which is component centric and which handles the DOM better, you know, even better than React if possible. And that's why probably I think Angular 2 and 2 plus versions are now, you know, into the market. Otherwise, it would, if React would not have been there, then I think Angular.js would have been the way people would have gone for.
I know, talking with the team, they just had so many issues with Angular.js that they didn't see a way around without the basically essential rewrite. So I know it was painful, like you were alluding to, but necessary. Yes.
Definitely. The verbosity of JavaScript was mainly the cause, and mainly the way the variables were handled and all. And, you know, there was something called a constructor pattern as far as class and object creation is concerned. And that was basically a function which has a lot of context to it, which is not how a function should or should be. And then TypeScript solved all the problems for them. And it was actually really courageous of the Angular team to just revamp everything. And, you know, they just had to risk the whole reputation. And it actually had a lot of, I cannot say bad reputation, but developers actually didn't believe in Angular at that point when Angular 2 came into the market. But then again, now it is all again, you know, all set to normal by God's grace, because it is Google that we're talking about. And it is actually doing things a lot better than so many other frameworks in the same thing. And yes, so coming back to components, so just for the record, components were there in Angular.js as well. And now Angular 2 or 2 plus is having components as their basic building blocks. And components are meant to be individual entities, which are decoupled, and decoupled to such an extent that a team in India can code on one component, a team in the US can code on another component, and still they won't face any problems considering the code conflicts, or only if there is a miscommunication between the teams would they face any problems, you know. So it's a human error that would lead to any problem if it is a component-based programming. Now, provided that these are decoupled entities, there should be some mechanism that the developers should be able to take, and they should be able to, you know, pass data between these entities just to bridge them together, or maybe make them work together with each other. So that's where the component communication that we are talking about comes into the picture. And then what I also think is that even if there is one sort of hierarchy that we think about where parent components, where a parent component has a lot of child components and all, in that case, also there is a communication going on between the parent and the child. So at that point, there's no bridge required because they are like connected. So interconnected components like parent and child easily can communicate between one another. And then there are like two separate components altogether who are nowhere related to one another, and then they can also communicate. So these are like some types of component communication that we would like to throw some light on. So first type of communication that we talk about is a parent and child communication. So if you imagine any component hierarchy, a component hierarchy is always a composition model. So when I say parent and child, we should not misunderstand that by the fact that a parent would always be inherited by a child. In a component-based architecture, the parent is always composed of a child, which means the parent is at the top and the child is at the bottom of the hierarchy. In an inheritance model, it's a different, it's quite the opposite thing. So in any component-based architecture, parent would be at the top, child components would be, you know, below parent, and then so on and so forth. So there is an easy way, you know, if you think about a hierarchy itself, a parent can easily, pass a prop down to the child. And that's where one of the decorators in Angular, now Angular follows a decorator pattern, which is very powerful. One of the decorators called input decorator is what helps the parent to pass down data to the child. So basically the child receives the data as input from the parent, and hence the name of the decorator input. So basically a child can take data as much as it wants as properties through the parent, and the parent can pass it on. So basically that's one set of a communication. And when the parent changes that data, because it is a property inside a child, the child's UI would change. So that's also something that Angular has, and it is really interesting, where any property that changes inside a component, it would change or re-render the template, the HTML of the component. So if a parent changes a property, which is being passed as a property to a child as an input, the child would also change. So that is one way of communicating from parent to child. So there is a parent-child communication going on. And then there is the other way around, the opposite, right? The opposite. So where the child component can communicate with the parent, like child component can send some messages to the parent. So that is something called event that the child emits. And there's a thing called event emitter that helps you to emit the events. So at that point, there's a decorator called output decorator that helps you to get the output from the child to the parent. So input and output are quite opposite. So if you imagine input decorator being used to drill the data down, output decorator can be used to pass the data upwards to the parent. And output decorator is pretty tricky. I mean, not that tricky, but it's not as straightforward as the input decorator. Input is really easy, but output has some other entities involved, because output is essentially emitting events. It's not like passing the data, but it is emitting the events, and the parent is listening to the event. So those parent and child communications are some things that people generally do in Angular components. Then people get carried away, and then people keep on passing the data down to the props, right at the, from the top component right to the bottom component. And that's what Angular tries to avoid. And that's where Angular has fixed things. You know, if we compare it to its predecessor, that is, I'm not talking about AngularJS, but I'm talking about React. So if we talk about React is just a view library, and it doesn't have anything at all other than the view portion. And React actually, if you don't use any kind of a state like Redux or something like that, there's only one option to pass data down to all the components, is start from the top and keep on passing data, drilling the props down to all the children. And that's what Angular has solved. So say, for example, if you have a 10 level of hierarchy, and you have a component at the top having some data, but that top level component wants to pass the data to the 10th component in the hierarchy, you would not actually drill down the props by the input decorator. Input decorator is really good when it comes to two levels. So from one level to the second one, if you want to pass it down, you know, input is the best thing. However, if from first level to the 10th level, if you want to pass the data, input would not actually help much, because that would make a lot of complexity as far as the coding is concerned, maintainability is concerned.
So you're saying that's the red flag for someone to look for, is if they're going beyond one level with the inputs.
Yes, that's the red flag. Okay. Like rule of thumb, never use input twice. And that's basically it is. So when that sort of a scenario occurs, Angular has already solved it. You know, Angular has a mechanism called services, and services follow a singleton pattern. And that too intrigues me about Angular, that, you know, Angular has, you know, I started off with AngularJS. And at that point, I was like, that was back in 2010 or 11, I guess. And at that point, I was not aware of so many design patterns per se. And then I came into React, and then I came into Angular 2. At that point, actually, you know, during those few years, I also learned some design patterns, and I saw them being implemented in Angular 2. Because Angular implements a decorator pattern. Angular implements, of course, MVC. It implements, the singleton pattern as well. And services are singletons. So singletons basically mean that whenever your Angular application get initialized, those objects are created and they reside in the memory somewhere, but they're not created the second time, which is not the case with the components. If you create a component, you can create so many copies of it. Like you don't have to actually create copies, but Angular creates copies of it for you if required. However, if it is a service, which is a singleton object, in that singleton object, Angular would never create a copy. But wherever it is required, Angular would just pass on a reference. And because it is a reference, remember, because it is a reference, it is the same object that we are accessing. Hence, if the object has some properties that change, that particular property would be reflected everywhere that singleton object is accessed, because it's the same reference that we are talking about. And that's where the whole component communication is a success, because the top level component can now communicate with the 10th component via a service, via a messenger mechanism. And that's basically what one of the ways that we communicate looks like. And that's what we are focusing on right now.
So, you know, that's really interesting. And that kind of leads to a conundrum that me and my team have run into a lot, which is if you use inputs and outputs, a component is super reusable. But when you start to use services, that reusability in a different context starts to become really difficult. So, I don't know, have you come across that? And do you have any specific things you've tried to approach in terms of like how you use services in a way that still allows components to be reusable without?
Right. I understand the question. So yes, that is basically that is the trade-off. And then we'd have to handle that trade-off, because services, obviously something, if you want to use in a component as a service, your component becomes dependent on that service. And that's where the dependency injection comes into the picture, and your services are injected into the component. So basically your component would not be able to function without a specific service. So what we generally approach it, or how I have generally seen people approaching or approaching this, or maybe, you know, implemented at some places, is that we create a generic service, something like NGRX, you may say, or something like Redux, you know, but not exactly that, a very miniature version of that, basically, where we pass on some payloads along with whatever the messages that we have. So basically, it's the same thing as Redux, like it'll be message type, or basically the action type and the payload, basically. So it will be a generic service that all the component would be dependent on. And then whatever type of message that you want to pass in, you can pass in. The component that consumes that service would check for the type. And then if the type is available, or if the type matches, then the component would do something. Otherwise, it will not. So that is one way of working around that sort of a scenario, where you can create a generic service. The component would anyways be dependent on the service. That is for sure.
Oh, yeah. That's really interesting. We hadn't thought through using like a more generic service. So that's pretty cool. We've kind of gone a route where we try to have a like parent component that is tied to the service, and then it embeds like just a display component inside of it, so that we kind of like we utilize the service to get it down to a lower level, which we call like a smart component. And then we have like a display component embedded inside, which is using the inputs and outputs, which ends up being a lot of infrastructure, but it helped genericize things. So no, I like that generic service. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I have seen this sort of a mechanism that you're mentioning. And if I give you an example of that, I think we would all everyone, every listener would be more clear for it. Like if we talk about, for example, a login form, then the setup that you were explaining would be a login page and a login form, two components. And your page would be the one that would be consuming the service, while the login form would be more or less a display component with inputs and output. So that sort of a thing. And all the business logic, like all the validations and all, would be in the login page rather than the login form. Or maybe it can be in the login form. I mean, it doesn't matter. The whole question is consuming the service. So while what I say in this particular case is just have a login form component and have your generic service and you know, let the login form consume the generic service and then run with it. So that is basically, but both the approaches, I find it good because I have been programming in, you know, Redux, and this the one that we discussed about a page and a form, that approach comes in from Redux because, React and Redux, where, people do this kind of a thing where there is a page and then there is a form sort of a thing. So yeah, that approach is also something that I have used for a long time, but Angular, has changed things a lot. And that's why this generic service seems more applicable to me. And I have not used that page and form sort of a thing with Angular at any time, but I would like to, since you have mentioned that you have tried and tested it, so I would like to do that someday.
Awesome. Are there any other types of communication that you've played around with? Obviously, you mentioned Redux in the background. Obviously, mm-hmm. There's different libraries. What other types of approaches have you done?
I've also gone for NGRX. But then for some reason, I always feel that NGRX is an overkill. And the reason is NGRX is all reactive state management, right? So it uses RxJS and makes everything reactive. But if you think about it, Angular services themselves are reactive even without RxJS. So if you go for a subject and observable mechanism, services would still work and they would be reactive and all, which gives you sort of an NGRX feel, but not with those actions and all those things, but you can implement that on, in a custom basis. But then again, if you don't use observables now or subject, and if you create services as a singleton object in JavaScript, if you think about JavaScript now, in JavaScript, objects are always passed as references. So if I create an object, like if we go for basic JavaScript, vanilla JavaScript, if I create an object and if I assign one variable to that object, now that variable becomes a reference to that particular object by default. So that is the way JavaScript works, and Angular services actually use JavaScript unknowingly that way. So they are already reactive. So because services are singletons and they are objects, they're somewhere in the memory, and basically dependency injection is equality of one variable to the service variable, and that equality is always a reference. So if you change anything inside the service, you would get that reflected no matter what. Unless you're calling an API or something. So say, for example, if I have, let's take a basic alert message example and usage of subject and observable, right? So in an alert message service, I would never use subject and observable because that itself is reactive. It doesn't communicate with any API or anything like that. But say, for example, if it's a resource that we are trying to consume, let's say an employee from an API server, at that point, the subject and observable would be something that we would be using, because at that point there'll be no connection as such. So there is decisions if we want to take, if you want to create services where if you want to just let JavaScript roll with it, have objects and let JavaScript do the trick and, make it abstract for the developer. A new developer, a fresher, would always wonder what is happening. But, experienced JavaScript developers would know that, okay, objects are always references and hence the alert messages are passing and all. So you might have to make that clear. But then if you want more control over it and, if you want to have API calls done, at that point you use subject and observable as well. So that is also some decisions that we might want to take if you don't want to be it resource intensive.
Thanks. Right. I mean, I've been sort of furiously scribbling down my thoughts as you've been going through this. Thanks very much for all of that, because it's been fascinating, actually. So one of the things I wrote down is finding the balance. I will just elaborate on that a little bit. I remember when I first learned about the having a shared service for passing data between components. It was kind of eye opening to me, because as a brand new Angular developer, I have experienced what you've described as where you just end up with this huge chain of input and output, which is absolutely fine when you're talking just between a couple of components, you know, exactly as you say. But then, yeah, you can just end up where you just have this sort of huge pipe of stuff just go right. It goes in and then it goes out and then it goes in and then it goes out and then it goes in and then it goes out. And then obviously you've got to handle it going the other way as well, which can be a nightmare. And so, yeah, when I first learned the, shared service pattern, it was fantastic. It took me a little while to figure out what on earth was going on. But yeah, now I'm a big fan of that. And I recently showed that to a colleague who I work with who had not seen it before. And, you know, it was the same result for him. He was like, oh, wow, this is great. And then recently I was doing a code review for this colleague and they had this sort of complicated shared service pattern going on. And I was sort of like, well, you know, you're literally just passing some data from this component into the next component. You could just use inputs and outputs for that. And he's like, no, after you show me this, I don't like inputs and outputs anymore. I only like to do it through my subscription, and through my observable. I'm like, okay, so where do you find that balance? I mean, is it cool to always just go with a subscription or should you actually, is there a point where you should go, this is overkill to use a subscription? I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I would like to explain it by an example. Say, for example, if we are going for a shopping cart UI, right? And in that case, there is a list of products that we have, and each product has its own thumbnail, essentially. And that thumbnail itself, it's a component, right? And now what you're trying to do is we are trying to basically call an API for the list of products. And then we are trying to loop through those list of products, and then we are trying to render each and every product. So if we call that list of products a product list component, and if we call that thumbnail a product item component, what happens here is that I would not like to call the API both in the product list and the product item, because when I go for the product list, I get all the products anyways. And all I need to then do is, most sensible way is just to pass it down, because then I would not like to call an API another time, right? The second time. So basically I take the products while rendering the product item component. I just pass that one product down to the product item. So the balance that we find here is whenever your web services are whenever you can save a call to a web service and it's a two-level hierarchy that you're talking about, at that point we can simply go for the input. And rest of the places, let's say if we take the same example, like product and the cart, right? So cart is a totally different component. And when I add my product to cart, I have to call an API. And at the same time, I have to update my cart. At that point, inputs, outputs, they would be bizarre. Like people would be pulling their hairs off if we go for that sort of an input output communication, So that is where you make a decision. That is where you strike a balance.
Yeah, that is, that's a great example. Thank you. Yeah. The balance is super important. And something else I've scribbled down is I find it frustrating that sometimes I want to be able to react on a change to something that's coming through the input. And I feel like, if I'm doing it, if I'm changing my values through a subscription, it's easy, right? I set up a subscription and then I can tell my code to do something.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
When that value has changed. But if I'm like, you can't, there's not really anything you can do on an input, is there? I mean, other than using on changes, which I like personally, I'd like don't write any code in on changes. And I know I've seen, you know, even in code bases I'm working in at the moment, I see reams and reams of code in on changes. And maybe for some people that's cool, but I find that that method, that lifecycle hook just gets hammered too much. I mean, am I making a problem that doesn't exist here in my own head or what?
As far as the input is concerned, if we stick to our principle where we just go for that two-level hierarchy and we are just passing data down just for the display purposes only. Like Eddie was mentioning earlier that they have a service consumption component and then there is a display component. So basically there's a smart component and a dumb component. So dumb component just displays the data, whatever you threw at it. So at that point, you don't need control over it, you know, because you need to just pass the data down and just display it. That's it. So the problem comes when you need control over that display. Maybe you want to make a decision on whether to display something or the else. Now, major things are done by the template itself, like NGF and all. But still, if you want some programmatic control, at that point, what you mentioned would be applicable, where you would need some control over the values that are changing, or maybe make some decision, or maybe log something at least, you know, while the values change. So at that point, inputs would just fail. But then again, the usage of input is what I would like to, again, go back to Eddie's example, like that is the correct usage of input, where you just want to have a dumb component and, or I'll call it a presentational component. And we just pass the data down and the component just displays the data and that's it. So that's where the input comes into the picture.
Are you freelancing or moonlighting? Or maybe you've thought about going out on your own? Every week, we have a group of developers at various stages of the freelancing journey on the Freelancer Show to talk about becoming better at freelancing. We also bring in experts to talk about marketing, SEO, and delivering high quality to clients. So if you're interested in going freelance or you are freelance, check it out at freelancershow.com.
So yeah, good. So when you want to be able to react on a change, you should be doing it with a subject.
Yes, that's correct.
Good.
I have a kind of crazy idea to throw out here. And I will say this is a hypothetical situation in case it's a crazy situation, because I would not want to admit to having written this. But what do you guys think about having a setter and a getter on your input? So your input triggers a setter function, which then allows you to kind of react to the new values that come in. And then, of course, you would store that in a private variable and then have your getter return that. So it looks like a normal input variable, but it does magical stuff when the setter is triggered.
Sounds like yeah. Madness.
And that's what basically Chris is suggesting, you know, because at that point when you exactly that is the scenario when you want to react to some changes, at that point you would hypothetically, if it is possible, you would do that. And I think it might be possible, like we might want to refer to some hooks that Angular might have for the component lifecycle, and that might be possible. There might be a possibility. I'm not quite, it's not on top of my head, but it should be, there should be something like this, you know, what Eddie is describing in the form of a lifecycle hook in Angular.
Yeah, that was just one thing that came to mind, so I thought I'd throw that out there. Mm-hmm. But definitely, I think when you have a lot of complicated logic, like you said, Ravi, like you want to switch to services for sure.
Yep. So in that case, we do use services, and then comes in NGRX, that is the god of component communication. This whole idea, like, I always feel frustrated at one point in time where, you know, the learners that I teach, they come in my Angular class and the first thing that they ask is, are we going to cover NGRX or not? So in that case, it's like, it's not necessary to get NGRX covered, you know, as far as Angular is concerned, because in order to cover NGRX, you should have a good experience working with a very big application that would not work without this sort of a reactive state changing mechanism. And unless that happens, you'd not be able to know the value of what NGRX adds to your, you know, whole application. So what I advise them is to just go step by step, go with services, try to implement, like I don't even, you know, mention NGRX until at one point they come or until they come to a point where they think that, okay, this sort of a mechanism like action types and, you know, payload and, you know, dispatching sort of a thing is necessary, or effects are necessary. At that point, when a learner reaches at that point, I just throw in, okay, what you were trying so hard from 4 to 5 days is here. NGRX, this is the link. You can implement it and you can go ahead with it. So for most of the cases, Angular projects, I don't think it needs NGRX, but NGRX is, again, a good way of component communication. But eventually, it's a service that works in the same manner as any service would, but then it is more organized. You know, it's a global variable. We are always advised against global variables. But then now, because we are rebels, we just come up with an organizational pattern to handle global variables, and then the whole world uses it. You know, so that is basically what it is. So that's what also what I love about Redux and NGRX and Vuex and, you know, MobX and all those application state management libraries. It's the rebellious nature of those libraries that we are always, right from the college, we were advised against using global variables, but here we are using global variables, managing stuff. So that is good.
I think you're right. Like, you do see a kind of obsession with NGRX. Certainly when it first started to arrive, it felt like it's all anyone was sort of blogging about in the Angular space. NGRX is here, way! But actually, you know, I've worked on several projects that use it now, and I could easily say that I think probably only one of them really needed to have NGRX, you know, because
Chris? Like, if you're looking across these projects that you're working with, is it literally just size of the code base?
I was just working, the one that I think did benefit from it is just, it's an application that was just handling obscene quantities of data, and that data was constantly being shifted around the application, right? So in that case, it made perfect sense. And in fact, you know, when I came on board that project, they'd only been adding NGRX to it for, I think, maybe a couple of months. It was previously just using subscriptions. And it's just because the app had just grown to such huge proportions. And as I say, it was constantly shuffling data around that was just being accessed by so many different components sort of at once, who were all accessing it and changing things and needing to react to the changes. And so in that case, it made sense to have this sort of central data store. You know, it's exactly what it's there for, to have the central data store where everything could just tap into that one central location for right, getting the data and changing it. And but, you know, the project that I worked on directly before that one, that had NGRX in it, and it was a tiny app that didn't do much. And it was just like so much work doing all the NGRX stuff when I could easily just have been piping the stuff around with my services and subscriptions. So I think people get a bit overexcited about NGRX. And I think I've dug it out. It was in the back of my mind. Now I'm in the wrong browser. It was a talk by Mike Ryan at Angular Connect in 2018. It says, you might not need NGRX, and it's like just the fact that the fact that they need to do a talk telling people maybe that they don't need it says a lot about how obsessed people got with it. I think.
Yeah, I think it's hard because people just get so excited. and they're like, it's like whenever you taught them, you know, instead of inputs and outputs, you can use the subject, and they're like, well, I'm going to use this everywhere. And it's the same. Everyone just gets excited and they use it on all the things. So,
yeah. And I would also like to add on to what Chris just mentioned. There is a rule of thumb as well in here when that whole flash of genius when you want to use NGRX in your project, you know, where if that generic service that we were talking about, Eddie, if that gets out of hand, you know, it has so many things that you need to manage and all, at that point you should make a decision and move to NGRX, and that is when there are a lot of components and, you know, your state, as Chris mentioned, is affecting a lot of things. But right at the onset, if you start with NGRX, because we are always nowadays, like, most of the projects are agile, we don't know at what point a project would go or a project would end it. So at that point, I mean, even if you're just using a good service mechanism, and a good organized service mechanism, which doesn't have any learning curve. That would also be beneficial for the newbies or the team members, basically. And you would still be able to live with NGRX or without NGRX, I'm sorry. So basically it's that, you know. So there is always a trade-off, or there is always a decision that you have to take with Angular in every aspect, you know, right from the beginning, because it is really overwhelming. There are so many things that are there in Angular because it's a framework, you know, that's the fact of the matter. And you have to take a decision when you stop using or when you stop overusing something. So that is there always.
We talk about how NGRX might not be needed if a project is too small. And then the assumption is that, like, as NGRX gets, or as your project gets bigger, NGRX, you know, is more needed. On the inverse side of that, like our product at the company I work with, we actually store so much data that there's no way we could load all the data into the web browser at once. Like, we actually overwhelm MySQL databases and have to have this like in-memory database called HANA on some instances. So like, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of, you know, entities. And so because we can't store all of that in the web browser, we actually have to do all of our filtering and querying on the server, which we didn't realize this when we started doing NGRX, and we went full throttle into NGRX in one segment. But it didn't occur to us until after that, because we never have all the data in the browser, pre-filtering it on the server actually made NGRX almost completely useless to us and like a lot of overhead. Because every time we wanted to change the filters, we had to re-query the server anyway. And so it was essentially like a temporary local cache, which was not helpful. So when you get to the size that your project is so large, you can't load all the data in the browser. That's also another kind of gotcha with NGRX.
Yep. So there is a fine line. So definitely that's like your in-memory database would do the role, or would play the role of what NGRX would, you know, if you're in-memory database would not have been there. So that is there. And again, this Angular already has provided us a lot to work with. This whole idea of NGRX comes with the idea of Redux and React working together. And people just come from that React Redux background and they expect something like Redux to be the savior. But then Angular already has it in the form of services where, you know, it's a singleton. You have your data in one place, and you can, you know, basically check that data anywhere that you want to. And at times, you don't even have to use subject and observable pattern. So services are there, you know, in Angular, and we're good that way. So that is there, of course.
You absolutely hit the nail on the head with that. You know, I worked with a young developer a year or so ago who had come from a strictly React background, but onto an Angular project. Like literally the first thing he did was just added NGRX into the project and like raised the pull request and like, what are you doing? It's like, well, you need it, you know, you need the state management. It's like, I get it. I totally get where he's coming from, you know, because you've come, just as you say, Ravi, you know, it's come from a development environment where state management is a widely used thing, but just, you know, Angular handles so much of that for you. Mm-hmm. This is part of my sort of bugbear with NGRX. You know, I now have grown to the point where I don't dislike it because I've used it enough in places where it's been useful that it's made my life easier. But it's, yeah, people's obsession with just adding it because they think we need it because it's a thing that exists. But actually, you know, Angular state management is great a lot of the time until it's not. Until you get an expression changed after it was checked error, then it's not great.
Yeah. So again, I mean, this is all like nothing against NGRX, just to clarify, every one of us would agree. It's just that as a developer, we should have the capacity of making a decision on when to use stuff and when not to. You should not just be using things because you can. With great power comes great responsibility. So that's the responsibility that you have, you know. So that is there. It's a very classic one, but that is true.
Absolute bonus points for the Spider-Man quote. At least 10 bonus points.
Is that where it originated? Because I've heard it in so many places. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah,
the first Spider-Man, I guess. I heard it the first Spider-Man.
How dare you even ask that question?
My bad. Apparently, Spider-Man is more sacred than state management to Chris. So
hang on, you can't see it because the position of my webcam. Look, I've got right there behind me, the Spider-Man.
Oh, nice!
Right, just one right next to your Minecraft pick. Yeah, I loving
one,
it.
Got one right here. There's one I can't reach. I love Spider-Man. Anyway,
nice.
So
are we moving to Spider-Man now, or
kind of?
I could keep going for hours if we did that.
we are actually coming up on the top of the hour, Ravi, and I was wondering, is there any like last closing like statements that you'd like to say before we move on to picks about just really, you know, component communication and what you suggest people do and resources, etc.?
So what I suggest, like not only component communication, but more of a general thing, whenever you want to, like, this is for the learners, because I think along with the developers, there would be people who might want to learn Angular, who might be listening to this particular podcast. So if you want to learn something, just go to the official documentation and that's it. All right. So you don't have to, most of the time, you don't have to hop around seeing long videos just to implement certain things. You know, official documentations are great. As far as Angular is concerned, it is awesome. That is where I learn most of the things from. And then I go to the videos if something, like some people might have some different thought process, and that is also important to grasp. You know, no disrespect to anyone. So we might just want to have the documentation to be preferred first, then the rest of it. About component communication, services, subject and observable, like you should know what a subject is, you should know what a behavior subject is and observable is, and you know how to implement it. Maybe, you know, if you want to have reactive local storage, you might want to go for a behavior subject, but if you don't want to do that, that is also possible. So RxJS is also not the answer to everything. So with, for example, you know, last example I would give is that if for example I have my user and my token in my local storage, and I have a user service getting that local storage for me, it is not necessary for me to use any RxJS concept. Still, it would be reactive, because that's how services in Angular work. So basically, the bottom line is Angular has provided us a lot of things to work with, and it is just not fair to go for other options unless you already have tried your hand on the existing ones. And you know, if that doesn't work for you, then go for external resources, because we don't want to make our app heavier than it is already, you know. So that is basically what it is.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I really loved listening to you explain things, and the examples you had were just incredible. I think it really lent a great hand to audio only podcasts, I think. So thank you for the coming on and teaching us and walking through things. Before we jump over to picks, I just wanted to say that I can see why people like seek you out for training, because I could literally listen to you talk all day. So
the thing is, just a fun fact, the other day, like every time I review my video, I just sleep halfway down. You know, I just fell asleep. I just fall asleep when I just review my own videos that I record, you know. So I don't know about others, but I don't really enjoy listening to myself that much.
great advertisement there for your training services. I put myself to sleep, guys.
I make it a rule of thumb never to listen to myself. So
that advice taken.
Have you thought about learning to do native iOS development? Are you using Swift at work? Or maybe you've considered writing applications for macOS? We have a podcast that covers all of that called iFreaks. We have a new panel and a lot of exciting things to talk about, so come check us out at iFreaksShow.com.
So does anybody have picks, Eddie or Chris, before we let Ravi do some picks?
Yeah, I got one pick. The whole of like social media, certainly in my social media feed, is just full of people obsessing over Animal Crossing at the moment. Looking at Eddie now, he's one of them. And naturally, I've done the only sensible thing, and I recently acquired a copy of Pokemon Sword for my Switch, and I've been really enjoying it. It's really good. I'm trying to resist the Animal Crossing bandwagon, but I feel like that raccoon's coming after me at some point. He is.
He's hunting you down, Chris.
Literally, there's a raccoon chasing you.
I don't think we have raccoons over here, so I think I'm probably all right. We got our own stuff. But yes, my pick, Pokemon Sword. I enjoy it.
Nice. Yeah, I've got two picks. One, I don't think I've said this before. If I have, well, repeat pick. But one pick is Sentry, like a guard, S-E-N-T-R-Y. It's a service that allows you to report basically like JavaScript errors and stuff to a third-party server so that you can then see like, you know, of your software installation, like what errors are coming back. And so for a long time, like we've had no way, like we find bugs with our QA team, like through our own usage, but we have, you know, if a customer doesn't say, hey, I have this bug, like we have no way to know. And so we've started implementing that, and it's really interesting just to be able to suddenly have an error pop up on a dashboard and be like, oh, wow, like, okay, someone ran into the error, like, and it shows you where in the code as if you're looking at the JavaScript console, and it shows like what they clicked on just before and stuff. So we haven't gotten to use a whole lot, but definitely started to dive into it, and it's really exciting. So I am super excited about that. And my second pick is, so I was one of those Evernote people that like started putting everything in Evernote when it came out with the web clipper and everything. And it was like my brain for everything. And then they went through all their changes, and nothing against Evernote, but I got less excited about Evernote. The problem is I had no replacement. And so I've just gone without an external brain, which is not super helpful. And so this week I found Notion, which I'm probably late to the Notion train. Probably everyone else knows about Notion, but Notion essentially like allows you to kind of replace like Google Docs, and it has some like kind of basic like task tracking stuff in it and like stuff. But for me, it seems like a really big replacement for Evernote, where I can just kind of put all my thoughts in there. I can take notes in there. It has a web clipper. And so if I'm on a website, I can be like, hey, grab this HTML, throw it into a page in Notion. So I'm just getting started with it this week, but I am really excited to have a replacement for Evernote after my long dark.
Do you use the client on like the app, or do you use like inside the browser? Like, how do you use it?
Yeah. So I have a app on my Mac, mm-hmm. and I haven't started, I know there's an app on iPhone, but I haven't done that yet. But yeah, in the web browser, like I use a web clipper plugin for the browser, but then the actual engaging with the material I use in the Mac app.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I've been addicted to Dropbox paper for a while now, but sometimes the like offline experience can be painful. So, nice. So yeah, I will definitely check out Notion. It's a great pick.
Yeah, for sure. It's pretty cool. So that's mine.
Awesome. I've been playing around with the Oculus Quest lately. My work sent me and the other advocates on my team one. They said, hey, we want you to start programming in Unity and making online events for people. And I was like, that's crazy cool. So I've actually never put on a headset before this. So if you haven't and you get an opportunity to, I definitely suggest it, because I was one of those naysayers. I was like, it's not going to be that cool. And it literally blew my mind. So definitely if you get a chance to put on a VR headset, I would recommend trying it out. So yeah, that's my pick. But also, yep. Ravi is my pick. I'm actually so excited to have met you and follow you on all the social medias. So can you please tell us where people can find you and reach out to you and learn from you?
So I have my YouTube channel, goes by my name itself, Ravi Velyat. And I have some Angular tutorials going on right now in that particular channel itself. So you would have, you'd be able to, you know, see the tutorials here. And then my last name, velyat.com, is my website. All my contact info is provided in there. Anyone who wants to basically share any thoughts or maybe ask any questions, they can directly, like, I get emails from people asking some doubts or questions or, you know, some problems that they have with their projects and all. And I try my best to, you know, answer them basically to the best of my abilities. So that's where, and then you can follow my Twitter, same name, you know. So there are ways. If you just Google my name, I think my website might come up. So that is also there. These are the ones that you can follow.
Yeah, and I want to spell it. So it's Ravi. It's his first name, and then Veliyat for his last name. So definitely worth the follow. A very cool cat. So
thank you.
Well, all awesome. Right. Thank you, gentlemen, for the marvelous episode today. I hope everyone has fun and safe programming for this afternoon, and we'll see you guys for the next one. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for having me here.
Yeah, great to have you. Cheers, everyone. Yeah,
bye.
Thank you, Ravi. Bye.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.